Before we launch into keeping your eye on the goal, I wanted to share something with you. In the hospital, the relatives gathered in the waiting room where their family member lay gravely ill. Finally, the doctor came in looking very tired and very somber and said, "I'm afraid I'm the bearer of bad news," he said as he surveyed their worried faces. He said, "The only hope for your loved one at this time is a complete and total brain transplant. It's a very experimental procedure, very risky, but it's their only hope. Insurance will cover the cost of the procedure, but you will have to pay for the brain yourselves." The family member sat in shocked silence as they absorbed the news, and after a great length of time, someone asked, "Well, how much does a brain cost?" The doctor quickly responded, "$5,000 for a male brain and $200 for a female brain." Now, quickly the moment turned awkward. The men in the room tried not to smile, avoiding eye contact with the women, but one or two young ones who had not been to the marriage class smirked. A man unable to control his curiosity blurted out the question everyone wanted to ask, "Why is a male brain so much more?" The doctor smiled at the childish innocence and explained to the entire group, "It's just standard pricing procedure. You see, we have to mark down the price of the female brains because they've actually been used." Keeping our eye on the goal we started a message last week looking at keeping the past in the past, that it is part of us but it does not define us, and so we don't want it to dominate our present, and we certainly don't want it to dominate the future. And we looked at Paul's passage in Philippians 3. Michael spent a lot of time teaching and preaching at Philippians last year, and obviously some of it sunk in. And we look forward to his vision messages in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to read out of the message. I think part of this text is on the slide and perhaps in your bulletin insert. But Philippians 3, verses 10 through 14 out of the message, Paul says, "I gave up all that inferior stuff so I could know Christ personally, experience his resurrection power, be a partner in his suffering, and go all the way with him to death itself. If there was any way to get in on the resurrection from the dead, I wanted to do it. I'm not saying that I have this all together, that I have it made, but I am well on my way reaching out for Christ who has so wondrously reached out for me. Friends, don't get me wrong. By no means do I count myself an expert in all of this, but I've got my eye on the goal where God is beckoning us onward to Jesus. I'm off and running, and I'm not turning back." And there's a lot of good scriptures, but if you've kind of been looking for one to help you as you launch into the new year, this is a really good text, and encourage you to read it and let the Holy Spirit kind of help unpack it for you. Keeping our eye on the goal. This is not the only time of year, but it's a very natural time of year to be thinking about maybe starting something new, maybe starting a new exercise regimen, maybe adjusting your diet, maybe trying a new hairstyle, certainly probably putting up some Christmas decorations. And looking at the difference of the year. And, you know, we're all wired differently. For some of you, I think realistically, maybe this financial class that's coming up might be a goal for you. But, you know, goals have to be broken down into small steps. And the harder that goal is for you, the harder that area of life is for you, you have to make a smaller step, a baby step, if you will. And so I really want you to take that away this morning, and whichever area the Lord's really challenging you to make a goal and to make a change, you're going to really need to find that first step, that baby step. It's great to have a long-range goal. It's great to have a lofty goal. It's great to write it down. It's great to post it on the refrigerator, put it on your windshield, put it wherever you need to see it. But if you don't ever do anything, if you don't ever make that first step, goals are worthless. And Some time back, Brandon was over, and Brandon said, hey, I'm going to go run at Memorial Park. Would you like to go along? And I like to jog a little bit. Actually, I call it slogging instead of jogging. But I've been noticing I have, you know, the rest of me is incredibly young, but my knees are very old. And so I've been having some difficulties on asphalt. Absolutely can't run on concrete at all. And so he said, there's this nice running, you know, surface. And so, you know, but I was filled with a lot of fear and trepidation because I thought the only people that went and ran at Memorial Park were like professional runners, you know, like Diana Hurst, you know, people like that, you know, they just, you know. And so I just figured I'd probably get blown off the track and have all these people zooming by. And so anyhow, Brandon was kind and went, and he didn't go off and leave me in his dust, and he encouraged me along the way and be asking me how I'm doing, and I'd be going, you know. And so he stayed with me, and so anyhow, we did that, and I really enjoyed it. I found all kinds of people out there. I found, obviously, people who it was not their first time to ever run around Memorial Park. They were very good at it. They could actually talk and have a conversation while they were running. It's amazing. There were other people, you know, who were walking or maybe walking a dog or something. So anyhow, that was good for me. Someone helped me. Someone assisted me in making that first step. And so I've actually been back a few times after that now. You know, now it's kind of like, hey, how you doing? I'm a regular now, yeah. So, you know. Some lady goes running by, I try to hold my stomach in. Doesn't do a lot of good, but I try to hold it in. But, you know, goals need to be not only, you know, you pick a goal, but goals have to change. Goals are dynamic. If you're trying to lose some weight, you probably have a number in mind. You know, my goal this week is to lose 1 ounce. And then, you know, because in 52 weeks, you know, we'll be talking about some real weight. And so you get to the, you know, when the scales tell you you've reached that, then you adjust it. Maybe you go 2 ounces or maybe you go 3 ounces or something. You know, it's dynamic. I remember one time I was in some sort of little workshop or something. It was a small group of pastors, 15, 20 of us or something. And John Osteen, Joel's dad, was there, and I had never met John Osteen before. I just knew he was John Osteen, but he was very, very gracious. He was very down to earth, very warm, and I have never forgotten this little illustration that he gave about just following what God has put in your heart. And again, we were just a group of struggling pastors trying to keep the doors of our church open and serve God and love people and trying to keep people from being mad at us and that sort of thing. And he says, you know, when planes are on course and following goal, it's not a highway in the sky. It's not a laser beam or something. He says, you know, based on weather or wind or maybe the presence of other airplanes, you know, they kind of go up or down and they kind of veer to the right or the left. But, you know, being on course is a dynamic thing. You're just trying to get on course. And obviously, you need to be on course when you're going to land. That's when it's really important. And he says, you know, that's the way life is. You know, it flexes. It's dynamic. So as you make your goals, they're intended to be dynamic. They're not a fixed point. It's not an absolute. Don't be handcuffed to your goals. Don't become so restrictive that there's no flex in it. And so that was helpful to me, and hopefully that'll be helpful to you. The next point I want to cover this morning is discipline. And I think it's actually in your notes. That parenthetical comment is supposed to be UGG. Hopefully that's how you spell UGG. is, you know, I don't like discipline. In fact, when I think of discipline, in my mind, my voice becomes incredibly whiny. In fact, it sort of sounds like, I don't like discipline. Why does it have to be hard? Why is it not easy? I don't like it. See, because, and you know, some of us are disciplined in some areas of our life, and typically we are proficient in those areas of our life. Some of you are very disciplined about your athletic pursuits, and not surprisingly, you bicycle or you run or you work out, and your body looks like it, and you know, you enjoy it, and that's great. But maybe finances is not something that's easy for you to be disciplined in, and so that's hard. Now, for me, you know, I've always been kind of an organized guy, just kind of a nut about that. I've always been kind of a numbers guy. It's always been there. And so I'm not saying it makes me an expert, but, you know, being organized with money and knowing quickly what I do not have has never been a challenge for me. But, oh, my goodness, if you want me to go on a diet, oh, I hate a diet. I'm convinced every diet is from the devil, every single one. I hate being disciplined about what I eat. I hate it. It's just, wine. Well, we need discipline. And in those areas that are harder for us, that's not as natural for us, that's where we need more discipline. And so yet, when Paul's talking here about this, you know, running in such a way to get the prize, this is not a competition, and we need to hasten very quickly, because it is so unfortunate within our culture and even within the Western church. I mean, competition is rampant. You know, this is not about at all that we want to be the biggest and best church on 11th Street. This is not at all that, you know, we want the Vineyard movement to be bigger and better than the Baptist or the Catholics. We're not even trying to be bigger and better than the Muslims. We're not competing. We're not in competition with people. We're not here to compete with, you know, I'm more spiritual than you, and God loves me more than he loves you. That is so antithetical. I think that's a real word. That is so antithetical to the heart of what Paul is talking about here. But we do compete. I compete with me in those areas that God's challenging me, because I don't like discipline. I don't like it when God's trying to move me in those areas that he wants to move me in. And I'm kind of kicking and screaming, and my heels are dragging in the dirt. That's where I'm competing. I'm competing with me. I'm competing with discouragement. I'm competing with, I don't know how to do this. I'm competing with, what's the use? I'm competing with, it won't do any good. That's what I'm competing with. And that's what we're competing with. Now, because David Smith, good buddy, is in our life group, through David, vicariously, I've come to experience a little bit about marathons. Vicariously, that means I don't do any of the work, I just get to enjoy his results. And next Sunday, there's going to be a marathon, and you know, it's going to go right by here in front of the church. You know, the first time I came here, I thought, what in the world happened? I thought the world had come to an end. I mean, the streets were blocked off, cops were everywhere, and I didn't know what had happened, but that's going to happen. And I think the race starts about 7, and we're at the 5-mile mark. I think David's going to be running. I think Diana Hurst, maybe Michael Danke, maybe there's some others I'm not aware of. And so you want to be here and cheer them on. Now, if you want to see Diana, you better get here about 7. Should just be a blur, you know. And if you want to see David, you can come a little bit after 7. A little bit after 7. But, you know, the thought of running, if you're not a runner and You know, the thought of running 26.2 miles would just be beyond, you know, your scope of comprehension. You know, for me to think about that, I mean, I'm making it once around Memorial Park, and I feel like I have just won the Olympics. But to run, you know, 26.2 miles. But as I understand, there are some marathons, they call them ultra marathons, that go 50 miles. Some go 100 miles. That would take me a month. But you know, we are all in an ultimate marathon, and it will last our entire lives. This is a race that doesn't go. It's not about who finishes ahead of the other one. Again, we don't compete. It's just about finishing the race. Because in the race of life, if we stay engaged with what God's doing in our life and we finish, we all win. We all win. But you know, along with, you know, again, the thing we don't like about discipline, well, I'll speak for me. The thing I don't like about discipline is you have to be persistent about it. You know, you can't just try it once and say, see, I knew it. I knew if I ate those Brussels sprouts, they weren't going to help. They weren't going to do one bit of good. You know, you have to keep at it. Whether you're adjusting diet, losing weight, trying to exercise, you have to keep at it. And you can't just give up the first time. It's not fun. But saying that, you know, especially within kingdom life, especially within the church, we have to be careful about overdoing this idea of discipline, because whole segments of the church have gotten so good about practicing a discipline that the discipline has taken the place of God, and the discipline has taken the place of loving people. So we don't want to get crazy about this. So, you know, in the midst of the discipline, you got to have some fun, you know? I mean, by definition, if it's discipline, it's not always going to be fun, right? That's why I don't like to diet. It's no fun. But you know what? You got to have some laughter. A young couple was up here earlier that obviously I'm very close to. And you know, that's why couples have date nights. You know, that's one of the things I think they're reminded of in the marriage course. I don't know everything that's covered. But you know, marriage is about listening and learning about each other. But you know what? You just got to go on a date and have some fun. You know? So in the midst of discipline, there has to be that divine balance and that combination of fun. Otherwise, it becomes too severe and you won't do it anymore. Well, let's look here at the next thing we want to cover, and that is that God is at work in us. Paul writes for us in Philippians 2 and says, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. And if that's where he stopped, then we would be in a real challenge, because we would think, wow, this is like all on me. This is like all on us. But he goes on to say, for it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose. We are not by ourselves in this. When God challenges us with discipline, God's challenging us, it's because we are at a sticking point. And there's an area of our life, there's a direction in our life God's wanting us to move past. That's why he's challenging us. And yet, it's not just us gritting our teeth enough. It's not us just having enough willpower. It's not us just being organized with our plans. God's at work. God's at work in us. God wants us to cooperate with what he's doing. God is challenging us to cooperate. But God is the one who does the work. Anything of eternal consequence. I mean, we can all work hard enough and probably have many, many times either to start exercising or lose weight or a number of different areas of life, and that's fine. I'm not trivializing that. But, you know, if you're going to have a long-term effect, if something really good and wonderfully meaningful is going to come out of it, if a marriage works, God, it's because God blessed it. And yes, it takes people putting effort and cooperation into it. But no person can stand back and say, I did that. Look at me. Look what I've done. No parent can look and say, oh, my kid's this, my kid's that, because of what I've done. Because you know the truth. We do our part. We bow our faces before God. We cry, we weep, we laugh. And God does his part. And we say, God, you're good, and you've done a good thing. God's at work in us, friends. We're not on our own. This is not up to us. And if you have a takeaway this morning and the rest of this you want to forget about, you remember this. God is at work in you. This is especially important when things are extraordinarily challenging. And some of you, and we have friends and families in our church who are really dealing with some extraordinary health issues, financial issues. And it's at those times that probably one of our favorite verses becomes Romans 8:28, which some versions say, all things work together. But I like the NIV and perhaps today's NIV that says, in all things God works. God is at work all the time in every situation. Now, I'm as human as you, and when things are going well, in fact, even sometimes when we get in the presence, we come to church and wow, you know, and you know what I mean. Sometimes it's like worship is not, it's not just good music. It's not just, you know, skillfully crafted. Jessica, am I saying that right? But beyond that, it's special. I mean, it's like you say, wow, God did something amazing this morning. Wow, God really moved. And yet the reality is God is always moving. God is always at work. And so God is at work in you. And last thing before I leave this part, if we stay engaged in God's process, if we just, you know, as he is challenging us and moving us and we make those baby steps and we make those plans and we do our part, he and he alone is responsible for the results, not us. Our responsibility is not the results. Our responsibility is to cooperate with what he's doing and to stay engaged with it. Now, the last thing I want to leave us with this morning is to remember who you are. And when I wrote this, I was thinking about the Disney movie, The Lion King. How many of you remember The Lion King? And the main character's name was a lion named Simba, and his dad's name was Mufasa. And anyhow, long story short, I was going to show the video, you know, but I couldn't find it on DVD. I just had it on VHS, and I don't think he can do anything with VHS anymore. Anyhow, Mufasa has died, and he kind of comes back to Simba in a dream and to encourage him. And basically says, remember who you are. And I guess that's kind of silly, but you know what, friends? You need to remember who you are. Now, my problems with parts of the church is this has become a clarion call to get a super fat head about how great you are. And that's not what this is about. This passage here where Paul was writing to a young pastor who was fighting a lot of challenges in the church. And he says, but you, man of God, flee from all this. All these other things that people get caught up in, swept away in. He says, don't be sidetracked with these things. Flee from these things. Pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, gentleness. What needs to encourage us in those times that we're feeling down, when it's tough sledding, is to remember that we are not alone, to remember that you really are the people of God. You really are the blood washed, the called, the redeemed. You know, you, there's not another crowd, there's not another group, and all those that are, we are linked together. And I don't want to get sidetracked this morning, but this is why it might help you and I to get our head up above the hole that sometimes we stick it in and realize there's Christians around the world that have it a lot tougher than you or me. And they're just as called. They're God's people. They're redeemed. And that's, you know, it will help you and I to realize that we don't have it harder than anyone else. That we are not the most picked on, forsaken people that sometimes we think we are. To remember who you are, Paul goes on to tell Timothy, fight the good fight of faith. Take hold of eternal life. Keep this command without spot or blame. You know, I said in the first service, when as a parent or just as a person that wants to influence someone else, you have to learn the art that different things at different times can motivate people. Whether it's your child, whether it's someone at work that perhaps you're responsible for, or a group you're trying to motivate. And sometimes, in my mind's eye, there's a time to sort of hug people. And you know, I hug a lot. And I hope, I know we have to be careful that that's always appropriate, never mistaken. But you know, people need to know you love them. You know, men need to know that it's okay to be a guy and love another guy, and you don't have to worry about, is there something wrong with you? I hug more than anybody in my family. I hug my son. I try to be careful in public. I hug a lot. But you know, sometimes it's trying to know when you need to hug people and love them and kind of console them, and when you need to look them in the eye and say, you know what? You're better than this. You know what? You can do this. Now, that's not just athletic coach speak. It's true. It's real. There's times we all need sort of that push. Maybe it's a little kick in the seat of the pants, you know, because we get, I can't do this. And sometimes, and of course, to know when to do that is the art. But sometimes, you know, God holds us and loves us and bathes us with his gentleness and his care and his nurturing concern. And sometimes he says, hey, you know what I want to do in your life. Stop making excuses. Get up and go do it. And that's kind of what Paul was doing here to Timothy. He was challenging him. And you, of course, with anything, you know, whether you're dealing with children or anything else, you got to be really careful. You can overuse that. If you're too severe all the time, you know, then it just loses its effect. You know, it's... you've been around people, I have too, if they're always raising their voice and they're always, you know, it kind of loses its effect after a while. You just sort of tune it out. That's why sometimes people can maybe drop their voice and talk really quiet and really soft, and it almost has more of a attention-grabbing effect than a lot of drama, theatrics. God's not interested in theatrics. He's not interested in drama. He's interested in motivating us past our sticking points. And sometimes he does that by reminding us that we are his, that he has not challenged, that he has not called us to do anything that without his help we cannot do. Now, he didn't call us to do it on our own. None of us were made to do it by ourselves. We need his help. We need each other's help. There are no lone rangers in the kingdom of God. It's all a community of believers. We are corporately, we are individually his, but we also corporately his. I won't take time to read it this morning, but in Hebrews 12, it talks about, again, running this race and being surrounded by a cloud of witnesses, all kinds of people. Earlier this morning in first service, Jeff Armstrong was talking about his dad's mom, Mimi, and how she was just a wonderful woman of God and encouraged him in music. We need to encourage each other. Judine, that was dedicated this morning, I don't know how much opportunity I will have to have influence in her life. But I guarantee you, I will have opportunity to influence someone who will have opportunity to influence Judine's life. And that's the way we have to view all of this. We're all connected. We need each other. We can do this. We are the men and women of God. We can fight this fight God's called us to. Not fighting each other, not fighting other people, fighting discouragement, fighting apathy, fighting injustice. We can all take hold of this internal life. I mentioned this morning, when you watch a gymnast and they dust the dust on their hands, or you watch a weightlifter and it looks like they're putting talcum powder. What it is, it's intended to dry up moisture so they get a good grip. You know, friends, sometimes it doesn't sound real jazzy, but sometimes you just need to take a better grip. Get a grip. And we can keep this that God's given us. You know, it's not, we say, well, what's at stake? Everything's at stake. We're all connected here. People are looking at your life. It matters. It matters how I live my life. And usually we think in terms of morality and things like that, and that's excruciatingly important. The greatest gift, well, and I've talked about this, and again, my life was very stirred uniquely. I lost my father. He was just 43 years old. I was 17. Glow's father died just a couple of years older than I am now. Suddenly, massive heart attack. And I don't say that for some of you that, like, oh my gosh, you know, what a whacked out health history you got. That's not intended to make us afraid. Because the truth is, none of us has a guarantee of tomorrow, or 10 years, or 20 years, or 40 years from now. But the reality is, I can't think of anything. What I fear, if I could use that word, is that whenever that time comes, however it comes, and I'm not looking for it, I'm not praying it in. I don't want to get to the end and say, oh, I wish I would have. Oh, I wish I could have. There's a movie out. It's called The Bucket List, about two men facing a lethal disease, and it's funny, and I think it stirred up a lot of people's thinking, and maybe to think about what do you want to do with your life? And I think there's an aspect of that kind of thinking that's healthy. I think you and I need to think about, and I know we're at different places in life, some very young, some not quite as young. What does God want to do in my life? But at the end, my goal is to say to my kids and their kids and your kids and your kids and the Judeans that I have fought this fight. I finished the course. Now friends, I'll be very honest with you. That may not get you a lot of acclaim in this life. Because this life, what this life calls acclaim and success, is so, so, so shallow. But it'll make a big difference in the people that will say, I knew so-and-so, and they made a huge impact on my life. So-and-so and so-and-so, they impacted our marriage. You know, they were just a regular, ordinary person. They had their good days and bad days, but they loved God. They served God. They were the real deal. And we all know people like that who have touched our lives. And that's what I want to be. I just want to be the real deal. And I want to leave it on the table. And I want to keep the faith. And I want that to be our legacy. I'd like for you to stand if you would, and I'd like our prayer team to come down.